Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker up on TSN 4. Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Jamie Noodles McLennan, Raptors Heat tonight. Get to that a little bit later this afternoon. We got Marcellus Wiley still to come. Brad Lidge will join us. And Mike Johnson coming up here in a moment. The Leafs were back on the ice, back home this morning. And Ryan O'Reilly looks like he's close. I don't believe he's slated to return, you know, tomorrow, likely not even this week. But I would think by early next week, he's probably playing because he's out there before practices. He's passing, shooting, taking part in battle drills. That would suggest he's real close.
I would play him against Columbus next Tuesday, mm-hmm. a week from now. And then it's Thursday, Boston. So give him one game before the Boston game. And then I don't know, depending. I mean, he's got to kind of run the table.
Absolutely.
Like, you've got to get him into game timing, shape, and all of that. That's when you can start to peel back other guys. But to me, if you know, I don't know if you want him to go back to back if he's not playing tomorrow. So it is, they play Saturday, Sunday, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then
they got another back to back on the weekend?
Yeah, Saturday, Sunday, and then Tuesday, Thursday. What am I? Saturday, Monday, something like that. Sorry, I'm speaking.
Yeah,
I'm
early next week he'll return. Yeah. Anyway, he's not playing tomorrow night, and yet it looks as if, you know, the lineup and the lines of practice are, I think, you know, trending towards what Sheldon Keefe is probably looking at for game one. And he's got Yarncroke with Matthews and Marner, Kerfoot with Tavares and Nylander, which I know will lead to fair amount of anxiety for Leaf fans, the idea of Kerfoot in that top six, and some anxiety for Michael Bunting because he's got Bunting on a third line with Lafferty on the right side, and that's possibly where Ryan O'Reilly goes, and then I think Achari, Kamp, and Aston Reese is likely going to be your fourth line. So, you know, if O'Reilly returns, that'll be interesting, like who he plays with, where he fits in. They've seen what he can do with Tavares on the left side, if it's Marner or Willie on the right side. But I think that's another part of it. When he does come back, if it's this weekend or early next week, not only get him some minutes, but get him playing with the guys you think he's going to play with, right?
Yeah.
Like that, Matthews and Tavares have played with everyone, effectively. Yarncroke, Kerfoot, Bunting, Marner, Nylander, those two guys have been here the longest. They know all these guys pretty well. I think once O'Reilly returns, you got to find him two linemates and let him get four or five games in with those two guys.
No kidding. It's kind of like training camp where you have your kind of your guys, and I don't know what they're going to be doing with load management, but it's like come game time, start getting some chemistry, and you go out there with the guys that you're going to be playing with come playoff time.
Yep. Right.
There's been a lot of moving parts, and it's understandable. They had six new bodies at the trade deadline day, didn't they?
Yeah.
So that's understandable, but it's kind of time to get it cooking.
Well, I think O'Reilly is going to start in the third line. I think it makes sense. You hope that he's up to speed. Like, he's not a speedster to start off with, you know, so it's going to be he needs to play and get his timing back and feel good about his game. And yes, you can bleed him up. The luxury you have is you can get him up on the left side, play him wing, or push Tavares to the wing if you have to. But there's no reason to believe why you couldn't have the three down the middle and then have Kerfoot and Bunting kind of move around a little bit. I think for some reason, I don't know, and I know this would make Leaf fans frustrated, but like, I think Sheldon Keefe trusts Kerfoot.
Yeah,
he really
seems
does.
To. He said it publicly. He does. Yeah.
But Michael Bunting he's interesting for me. He's a guy I didn't like the interaction the other day. I don't know if we kind of talked on it a little bit yesterday. I didn't love that interaction. I don't think he's a 10-year vet to have that type of interaction. But maybe he's closer with Keefe than we know. And again, I'm not privy to these conversations behind the scenes. Optically, it looked bad. But, he's a guy that, he's gone from first line, now it's third line, and hey, we're going to be on a tough line energy and all of that. But, that's a guy that not that long ago was 50-point guy, 60-point guy playing shotgun with Matthew and Marner.
Yeah, right? Married to
Matthew
those two,
Smart.
Right? Like,
yes,
the belief
literally.
Was that was a line that you could almost take to the bank. Like, yeah,
yep.
They were going to play 80% of their shifts all year as a three-pack, and that has not happened. There have been times he's been on the fourth line to send
right.
a message, and that has become abundantly clear over the course of the season that Bunting is closer to a Kerfoot, Lafferty, type than he is to a Matthews Marner type in terms of what you can expect out of him. Like, he's one of those guys that you label as someone who can chip in and have a big moment, right? But he's not going to drive a series for you. And he, I think maybe that's a part of the adjustment to him being an everyday pro, is finding a way to contribute regardless of who you're playing with, regardless of how many minutes you're playing. And I think he probably responds to that pretty well. I mean, he's got a history with Keefe, right? Like CJ talked about it yesterday. Chris Johnson suggested it could be a positive because you play with a bit of a chip on your shoulder. Your coach is on top of you. Every player's a little bit different with the way they react to that stuff.
And if anybody, like the coach just said in that quote that Joe from the Bridge put up that Masters had, like Keefe understands when a guy's pissed off coming back from the, like, whatever on the ice, and you go up there, I don't know. The game's changed a lot, and it's a lot different, but not everything is all rosy where it's like, hi, can I speak with you? Okay, what would you like to say? Like, that's just not what happens on an NHL bench.
Heat of battle, I get it. It's just, to me, and you can speak to it. Hayes, you can speak to it in addressing a coach. I didn't come off of a shift. If I got pulled or was sitting on the bench or whatever and had an interaction, I get it. I don't know. Is there eye contact? Should there be eye contact? Are you just listening? Are you, you know, nodding your head? Like, it just optically didn't look good. Again, it's not that big of a deal. It's not a hill I would die on.
Well, they won the game, right? Like, it'd be different if they were losing and he was the source of it. It was, I don't know. I think, without knowing the context of the conversation, that's another thing. Right. Like the idea of guys making eye contact with the coach, that doesn't happen if it's tips, you know, like if he's just pointing out something that happened on the ice. Now, if he's railing on the guy, then I don't know. I mean, you could speak to that more than anyone else. But guys have tempers. Guys are fiery. Guys, you know, you're on the bench. It's at the end of the game. And the coach coaches everyone differently, right, based on what they feel they need.
And you can't. It's not like you can tell the coach completely off, but you can say, why don't you get off my bleeping case?
I just think there's certain guys that have the right to do it and certain that don't. That's my point. And there's a
Every year, I got more ballsy with the comments that left my mouth directed towards
the coach. Of course, as you should. Here's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. How did you respond to your coach during the game if you weren't having a great game and he was giving it to you?
Yeah, I probably would have given the token quarter turn as though I'm sort of paying attention. But my eyes and my energy radiating, why don't you just leave me the hell alone? If you were pissed off and you didn't think you maybe deserved it, like if you know you screwed up, you would take it and just kind of take it. But if you thought it was a bit unwarranted, then you would give maybe not the full, I'm not turning around and listening, but you'd give him a little bit of the, you know, you're out of line here as well. But I think, I think you hit the nail on the head. Coach coaches everybody differently, and the best coaches know what each player needs and how they react and would say, okay, Michael Bunting and him have a combative relationship, a good one, but a combative one. It goes back many years, and I'm down between the benches. They get on, like, Sheldon Keefe gets on Michael Bunting a lot. Like, he's always kind of pushing him and driving him and correcting him and challenging him, kind of probing him to do more or be better, like every game almost. So, you know, I don't think Sheldon Keefe would take the non-turn by Bunting as a great offense, because they have these sort of exchanges all the time. It's, you know, it's not the most respectful look, and it's not totally normal. But given that it's those two, and it happens all the time, they have these sort of fiery exchanges, I don't think it's a big deal at all. And I don't think Sheldon Keefe would even be insulted about what happened.
Where do you think his contract sits, Bunting, and his future here in Toronto?
That's a very good question. I mean, you know, he's clearly the fifth best option offensively on the team right now. And a team that has virtually nobody signed next year beyond the big four forwards. I guess Sam Lafferty has another year on his contract, right? But they don't have anybody really there. Now, I know there is interest. I've even talked to teams around the league that like Michael Bunting. Like, they'd like him on their team. Like, they would give him term. And, you know, he's kind of proven that he's kind of a 20-goal scorer. Or maybe a bit, you know, playing with in the top six, you don't have to put him with Matthews and Marner specifically because he scored on different lines. You know, he's got 20 goal mark. He's going to be a 50 point guy again. What's that worth on a long term deal? Is that worth 6 years and I don't know $4.5 million? Something like that?
I think so, Johnny. But my question would be is, if you're signing him, he's got to be a top, like, you to get those points in that, like, he's been playing with some of the best players in the world. Like, if you're signing him, he's not automatically going first. Is he going first power play? Is he going to play
no.
top 6 minutes? Like, I think it depends on his situation. Like, sometimes the grass might be greener. It's not greener on the other side because he's not instantly finding chemistry. Like, where's Matthews and Marner for him to play with on other teams?
Yeah, I get it, Noodles, but I think he's shown enough that, like, so you could put him on whatever, pick any sort of team. You could put him on Buffalo, and he could play in the second or third line there. He's going to get you near 20 points and 40 goals. And he, and right. the way that he plays so emotionally and he's so invested, and you know how general managers like guys who are involved in games, and give him credit that he is generally involved in games all the time. Like, yeah. I think if he goes to market, him getting a six-year, $24 million contract, not out of the question. From somebody else. Now, the question becomes, well, that's probably more than the Leafs want to pay him. Can the Leafs get him on a discount because he loves Toronto? He's very proudly from Scarborough, and it's really important for him to play for the Leafs. Can they get him on a six-year, 28, 3.5? You know, because at 3.5, you don't have to score 20 goals, right? Like, if you're on the top nine, period, at 3.5, that's plenty good value. Like, you don't have to worry about how much you score. So it is a fascinating conversation. I do think, you know, like a lot of players, what happens this playoff, how he performs individually, how the team performs collectively will go a long way in determining what direction. Because if they lose the first round again, there'll be changes on the team, and not just sort of tinkering changes. I think there'll probably be significant changes. But if they don't, then there likely won't be. And I think that's how much is riding on the first round for Bunting, for Dubas, for a lot of different people right now in Toronto.
Johnny, as far as the lines go, would you have, like, playoff game one matchups cooking? Like, would you be, like, Ryan O'Reilly, when he comes back, what are you doing with him, and what kind of combinations would you like to see?
Well, I said before, I think they're going to play three centermen, right? Like, I think Ryan O'Reilly's going to be the third-line centerman, with the option of loading up when necessary that Tavares can slide over and play on the wing, like they tried when he first got here. I think what you need to see, and need to see it quick, is can Ryan O'Reilly do a job with, who would it be? Maybe it's Bunting, maybe it's Kerfoot, maybe it's Yarncroke, whoever ends up, you know, being that, his wingers. Can they do a job against Kucherov and Braden Point? Because to me, at 5-on-5, that's the line they got to control. Like, the power play is a whole other situation. You can't take penalties against Tampa. But that's the line that drives it for Tampa. And if Ryan O'Reilly can do that, well, then you're feeling really good because you can set up your other lines any way you want. If he can't, and I'm not sure he can, given how good Braden Point is right now. Braden Point's one of the best players in the league. And Ryan O'Reilly coming off a 4-6 week injury to jump in with a week left and then play that guy. So that's what I would like to see. But I got to figure it out, like, in the first period, like, is he up to the task? Is this group up to this challenge? If not, then I think Austin Matthews has to play against Braden Point, which, again, is fine because Austin Matthews is more than up to that challenge, for sure. But that does change the dynamic of how you set up your game plan, depending on whether you can free Austin's line up to go offense more specifically or ask him to play a two-way game.
Yeah, it really is going to be a chess game here. And like Yarncroke, you mentioned, he's another guy that is signed beyond this year. He got a 4-year at 2.1. And that is what I find intriguing with the Bunting conversation. Bunting is younger. He has put up more offense this year included. But is he $2.5 million more? Is he an extra 2 years? I'm not sure. But there's a part of me that looks at their, you know, Keith's belief in Kerfoot. And if you could put a line together of Bunting with O'Reilly and Yarncroke, like, that's a good third line if they're all playing well. The problem is it opens up a hole in your top six. And, you know, assuming Kerfoot's going to be one of those guys, they, like, the drop-off after that naturally is just, it's non-existent. You're not putting Lafferty up there. You're not putting Achari up there. Obviously, Aston Reese is not an option. I don't believe Nyes is an option, you know, even though there's a lot of hype around this kid. So, I don't know. I think it could change from game one to game two to game three to game four. Like, he may change every single night.
100%. And the thing about Toronto, this year has had this sort of, you know, musical chair game up front where they've been doing a lot of different lines, a lot of different combinations. One thing I would disagree, though, Hayes, is I think Matthew Nyes may not be up to the task. I think he may get a look to see if he is. You know what I mean? Because as you just said, you know, you can set up the lines in a couple different ways, but if you put that third line together, like, they need another top six winger. And, like, as Noodles has already made me admit, like, playing wing is the easiest thing to do in the NHL.
That's a straight fact.
That is straight facts. And so, Matthew Nyes, like, you know, can he play 10 even strength minutes with Tavares and Nylander and take preferential third line matchups? Maybe. It would be great if they did. And I think of, like, what Chris Kreider jumped right out of college. Now, Chris Kreider is a very good player. And I don't think Matthew Nyes is going to be as good as Chris Kreider, but he jumped right out of Boston College straight into the playoffs, was very good. Obviously, Cale Makar jumped out of the college and straight into the playoffs, but he's a different animal altogether. But it goes back to another part of this conversation is I think Toronto really would have enjoyed Matthew Nyes getting knocked out this past weekend. Because it would have given them a few more games to see and maybe have a more informed decision before putting them in a spot that's totally high pressure.
With Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. So we all accept and we all know that Boston is the clear-cut number one seed in the East and the team to beat and the team with the highest expectations going into the playoffs. Do you have a clear-cut number two in the East?
No, I don't have a clear-cut. Like, I've liked Carolina all year long, but their goaltending has me scratching my head, and no Svechnikov really does hurt as well, even though I like them a ton. Jersey, great team, not a ton of experience, same goaltending issue. Rangers are playing as well as anyone. Like, I could make a case, as I am doing right now out loud, for any number of teams. And listen, I think Toronto beats Jersey or New York in a playoff series. But they're not going to get to them because they're going to go through Boston, which makes the path a little bit tougher. So, I don't know. I think the other five teams, I'll throw Tampa in the mix as well. Any one of those five teams could be considered a number two, but a clear number two in behind Boston.
Yeah. I'm not sure there is.
I don't disagree with that. I was chatting with Steph, I think it was yesterday. She asked me, she goes, is there a sleeper in the East? And I thought to myself, like, how big of a pain in the ass are the Islanders to play against? You know what I mean? Like, they play a style that is not sexy. They make you earn everything. The goalie's good. Like, their D are more mobile than you think. Like,
I just have to back it up a second, Noodles. How come I get asked, are you going to take the garbage out in the morning? And you get asked, is there a sleeper team in the East?
I don't know. I was walking through the room and got it yelled at me, like, what, you know, in your opinion, is there a sleeper team? And I'm like, I mean, I thought, okay, maybe it's whoever sneaks in there, whether it's Pittsburgh or Florida, because maybe they're dangerous and they're kind of firing on all cylinders, kind of playing playoff hockey right in there. But then I was like, man, this Islander team is, like, I've watched them quite a bit. They are gritty. Like, I don't know how you would term it, MJ, like, and you guys too. Like, it just, they are a pain in the ass to play against.
Does it have to be a wild card team, though? Like, wouldn't Jersey still be considered a wild card? I know they've had a great year, but no one saw it coming. They have zero playoff experience. They're young.
Yeah, that's
like
a good point.
Jersey, I would label them closer to a long shot kind of Cinderella than I would a powerhouse in the East.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, obviously, given
based on their history.
Yeah, based on the lack of playoff success, I suppose. I mean, the Islanders did just make the conference final a couple of years in a row there, a couple of years back. They both play different styles. And I think this is what people, when to Noodle's point, the Islanders make the game unpleasant. And not many teams play that way anymore, right? Like, tight checking and in your face and kind of physical and don't score a lot but don't care to score a lot, rely on their goaltending, rely on their system, much like the Barry Trotz version of the Islanders used to do as well. But they have a goaltender, Noodles. I think you can make the argument Sorokin's the best goal in the league this year. Maybe not in the world, but this year Sorokin's been as good as anybody in the league. Maybe not Linus Olmark exclusive, but that's why it would be an unpleasant. Like, so Carolina, it's likely Carolina plays the Islanders, right? Carolina's going to come second behind Boston, likely. very likely Carolina. The Islanders get the first wild card spot. As much as I like Carolina, I hate that matchup. Like, I would love for Carolina to play Pittsburgh because I think that puts dudes right in their wheelhouse. They'll just skate them into the ground. But the Islanders, who are going to have a better goaltending, can defend a little bit harder, make the game unpleasant for a smaller group. Yeah, like I'm with you. I would not want to play the Islanders, especially relative to Pittsburgh, because I think Pittsburgh, for those top teams, would not pose as big of a problem.
Right. It's interesting to think, because you're looking at the East, and, like, I'm not lying when you go, yeah, coin flip. Like, coin flip on a lot of things. Like, Boston is, everyone, you know, the logic, and I hate this logic, it's like, well, they haven't had a dip all season, so they're due for a dip. That's not logic. That's wishful thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not logic going, well, why would they have a dip right in the playoffs? Like, maybe they will. Maybe, and you can point to,
maybe,
well,
they get
Tampa,
better, though. Maybe, but they have another step to go, which would be terrifying.
That'd be terrifying. We don't even
know. You guys
know
how the playoffs go, though. Anybody can beat anybody. We're talking about an injury, a hot power play, a hot goaltender, four players that step up and play out of their mind that they've never played like before. They elevate. That can all be
four
difference
times.
Makers.
Two. You only need four. You can have three awful games and win the series. You need four really good games.
And I would say this, Noodles, you talk about coin flip, 50-50, right?
Yeah.
So I would say the Leafs-Tampa series, the Leafs will be favored. I bet, and there's models that run this, Lowell will love the math models, but it's probably going to be 52-48 in favor of Toronto. They will be favored. But it's essentially a coin flip. And then whoever plays Boston next round, as great as Boston has been, I bet that series is not 55-45. Like, I that's how tight, even the best team of all time, potentially, in the regular season, will not be like an 80-20 favorite. Like, not
Johnny, I think it would be 52-48 again for Boston.
Yeah, like that, 100%. Like, that's how close it is. That's how tight the margins are. And that's why it's so frustrating for teams who, you can do everything right. You can, like at least last year, in many ways, outplayed Tampa. Like, in so many ways, you could talk about that they were the better team. They scored more goals, all, like, doesn't matter when the margins are that tight. It just takes a moment or two, and those have gone not Toronto's way for several years now. But you're right, and that's what makes it fascinating. Because as great as Boston is, like, if Toronto or whoever plays, Toronto or Tampa, they won't be some massive underdog. Like, they will be right in that series with a good chance to win it.
Yeah. Yes,
well,
they will.
Boston's got to get past the first round, too. Like, it's just, there's no, like, that being
Tampa
said.
Right? When they were 128 points, Tampa lost to Columbus.
Absolutely.
Right.
They didn't just lose. Yeah, exactly. They got swept.
I guess my point is you can't point to that series and go, you're expecting Boston, that happened to Boston. That's the logic I've been hearing around in this neighborhood. It's like, well, that team, you know, Boston lost. And didn't it happen to Golden State? They had that ridiculous season, and they lost the
final up 3-2 to Cleveland.
Yeah, I think they're up 3-1 in that 3-1 series. And Draymond got suspended for game 5. You're right, Noodles, but I will say this, not that we have to bring the Leafs back into it, but it applies to the logic you're talking about, because it goes the opposite way with the Leafs, right? Because of their history. I was watching a panel down in the States, you know, a few weeks ago, and they went through 5 different analysts. Who can beat Boston? The Leafs didn't come up once because no one can picture it. Right, but you're what, the Leafs can't? You can't. The Leafs can't beat them, right? It's as if the Leafs are they're going to finish with 89 points and sneak in.
Other than that blowout 5 or 6-1 in Toronto about 2 months ago, they've played Boston fairly well the last couple of years in the regular season.
They're a very good team. It's not like Boston will be favored, right? And I understand
it comes down to the same thing, Hayes, that you always bring up. It's because of the past.
Because of their history. Well, that's all I'm saying is the history is the Leafs can't do it. Well, that's not logical necessarily either if we're starting from scratch again.
My comeback to that would be, I want to see if they can make it there. Like that, because that would be a round 2 matchup, which nobody has seen. Yep. So
that's true.
That would be my logic sitting on those panels. Is
Noodles,
like,
people are getting their gifts ready. Like they're just sitting in a file, getting ready to hit send.
Oh yeah, the archives are loaded.
No,
Leaf gifts.
Here's my other gift, the counter gift to that, guys. Johnny, tell me if I'm right with this. If the Leafs beat Tampa, won't the headline be "Plenty of respect in the handshake line this time around"? Do you not think that will be?
So there'll be some respect handshake reference, absolutely.
Right.
you know, there'll be all kinds of stuff. I mean, if they lose one game, what's that give? Everything's fine in here when the guy's sitting there on the table and the house is on fire. Like, it's all going to be ready to go. But it's like, it's funny. I was talking to my daughter and she's like, can you get tickets to the playoff games? Like, I don't know, whatever. But we're talking about, like, if you were able to go to Toronto in game 7 or game 5 and they were to win, like, this city would celebrate like they just won the cup. Like it would be such a, like, a pent up explosion of joy that they actually finally got it done. And then you wonder, do they take that momentum and that freedom and that dropping the weight of the burden and then be that much better? Or somehow are they going to be like, we did it, we're satisfied, and then maybe feel a little too content with themselves? It'll be fascinating to see, but I mean, like Noodle says, like, they got to get there first. And then
got
to
play the games. That's the thing.
They got to play the games.
And that's the only
reason.
They've
been there 3 years in a row, right? Three years in a row. Like, Tampa's going to make you earn it. Even if Tampa's not as good and they're not, they're going to make you earn it to get through them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It'll be fun. I think it's going to be fun. But
3 weeks tonight.
Stressful.
Oh, it's going to be stressful. Yeah. It's for all six teams in the playoffs, right? Like, the same logic applies to basically every series. And we were saying this early, Johnny, like, the West has been inferior all year. I believe that it still remains that way. But you look post-deadline, Colorado's red hot, Minnesota's red hot, the Kings are the hottest team in the league, Edmonton's winning a lot of games. Like, it's
Pacific.
It's going to get cooking.
Up on you, Hayes.
Yep.
Like, Vegas, L.A., and Edmonton are all, like one or two losses in the last 10 games.
Right.
They all of a sudden have more points than Toronto and Tampa. This idea the East was so much better has sort of, by this point anyways, has sort of drifted towards parity. In fact, maybe Toronto's division not quite as strong as the Pacific, or maybe in the Central as Colorado is surging as well. So, I think the 2-3 matchup, and this is, I kind of like this, I'm not going to go down the playoff matchup road or the playoff formula, but the fact that it's going to be, you know, right now, Dallas-Colorado 2-3. It's going to be LA-Edmonton 2-3. Ooh. It's going to be Jersey Rangers 2-3. It's going to be Toronto Tampa 2-3. Like, those are all good series with good LA Edmonton. Like Edmonton, everyone thinks it's McDavid at this time. I don't know if they're favored against LA. That's how good LA is playing with a goaltender now. Toronto's not alone in sort of the pressure of, like, we're good, but, like, we don't have any sort of luxury in the first round of thinking that we're much better than the team we're playing. Good Stanley Cup winning capable teams are going home. Probably four of them in the first round in that 2-3 matchup.
Can't wait. Yeah, we're 3 weeks away, and then it is go time. We'll leave it there, Johnny. We'll do it again later in the week.
All right, boys. Have a good evening.
Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota, and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. It's time to Toyota. Visit MapleToyota.com. Yeah, the playoffs are going to be a thing of beauty. They always are. The Stanley Cup playoffs are a thing of beauty, and it will be, not everyone will be breathing easy and having a good time.
Yeah.
And that's all you can expect, right?
There won't be any stress or what's the irrational thoughts or anything. Like, no. It'll just be all smooth sailing. Can you imagine if there's, like, a polarizing call, too? Like, that call that we were talking about the other day, that call, what was it? Intended
in Carolina,
call?
The intended whistle or
intended whistle
continuation
or whatever.
Of play.
Like, I'm praying. I can't look at Duthie or Hayes or you Noodles. I can't do it after a loss. I can't come up with something different if it happens again. Like, I'm dreading the night if something bad happens. Duthie saying for the sixth consecutive year. You think there'll be changes next year?
Mm-hmm.
I'll pass out on the desk. Like, I'll pass out.
Is this year 6 or year 7?
I don't know. Whatever it is,
this
man.
Is their 7th year in a row. But the first year against Washington, everyone knew that was house
and
money.
They lost in 6, didn't they?
They lost in 6. There were a bunch of overtime. That was actually maybe the most entertaining series.
We were at that game, weren't we, the three of us?
Absolutely. They lost 2-1. Remember, Matthews tied it late, like, off the stanchion. The place went nuts. It was like a Monday night, and then they lost in overtime, and anyway, it doesn't matter, but that was 7 years ago. And you talk about optimism. I remember leaving the building thinking, this team's going to win a cup in the next 3 years. They haven't won a series 6 years later.
A series, dude.
A series.
Let's not get crazy.
That's just a straight fact. That's just a fact. That's not a take. I mean, that's just a fact, man. I'm just telling you the honest truth.
Yeah.
So, yes, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. That's the beauty of the playoffs, is you don't have to worry about contracts and salary caps and, you know, formats and all that kind of stuff. You drop the puck and let's see who wins.
But that is kind of, Hayes, what I thought the trajectory was going to be. It's like 22, 23-year-olds, maybe they don't get it done. And then it's like maybe a first-round exit again, and then maybe they go a couple rounds, and then maybe it's like it's like they kept climbing the ladder. Maybe they got to a final, and then they lost in the first round. I don't know. I thought the trajectory was going to be a lot different.
Yes, and it has not been. And meanwhile, it's been Tampa. It's been Boston. You know, outside of the Columbus and Montreal ones, which, again, we don't have to revisit that. But it's, you know, they run into tough opponents, and they haven't got the job done. And the same thing's going to apply this year, you know, throughout the East. There are no layups. There will not be a layup.
Yep.
Raptors Heat tonight. Get you an update on the lineup. Who's going tonight? It sounds as if Jimmy Butler will not play tonight. So Butler's got a neck injury. It sounds as if he is out, which has the potential to be a massive benefit for the Raptors. And Kyle Lowry will play, but he's still in a minutes restriction. So how much will he play? We'll find out. Marcellus Wiley's still to come. Brad Lidge in about an hour. Opening week for the Jays and Major League Baseball. We'll get to that at 6:30. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.